Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Today was all about how they discovered the final victim, and in his body, that's Kenneth Roden. And it included a tense confrontation between Kenneth Roden's son and the man on trial and accused of taking part in the murder of his father 6 years ago.
You were going over there to tell him what happened.
Correct, yeah. We went inside, then that's when we found out that he was deceased.
What were your thoughts about the Wagners?
My thoughts about the Wagners? I just hope they get everything it comes to them.
This is the Piketon Massacre, Return to Pike County. Season 4, Episode 5, Morning at the Church. I'm Courtney Armstrong, a television producer at KT Studios with Stephanie Leidecker and Jeff Shane. Stephanie and I are currently in Pike County.
All right, so here we are. We're at the courthouse in Waverly.
The courthouse is not as busy as it was when court proceedings began. Now, it's mostly media and the victim's family members. It's important to note that George Wagner IV, currently on trial, has pleaded not guilty and has maintained he did not kill anyone. His father, Billy Wagner, whose trial is upcoming, has also pleaded not guilty to all charges. Today's testimony centered around the events leading up to the discovery of Kenneth Roden's body. He was found by his cousin Donald Stone and was the last of the victims to be discovered. Here's Donald on the stand.
How do you know Kenneth Roden?
He's my cousin. His mother and my father was brothers and sisters.
Some cousins are close, some aren't. Would you consider yourself to have been close to Kenneth?
Real close.
Okay. And tell us about that.
Just, you know, any time that I was down and out, the man was there to help me. Their mother fed me when I was young, and they're just helpful people.
Donald Stone is understandably emotional in the witness chair.
How did you learn that something had happened up on Union Hill Road?
Well, I was at a HUD appointment that morning. I had talked to a gentleman while I was there, and he asked me if I heard what happened on Union Hill. And I got word that there was some people meeting at a church.
So you went to the church on Union Hill Road, and who all was there?
It's just, there was a lot of people there, family. I mean, there was a lot of people there.
Okay. At what point did you learn how many had been killed on Union Hill Road?
Actually, I hadn't known at the time how many there were for sure.
You indicated that you tried to call Kenneth that one time, and that was from your home after the appointment?
Yes.
Okay. Did you personally ever try to call Kenneth after that?
Yes. Okay. Well, it was when I tried to make the phone calls, I did try to call him once.
Okay. And while you were at the church, did there become some concerns about Kenneth not responding to phone calls?
Yeah.
And can you tell us, did you decide to go to Kenneth's at some point?
Yeah, well, we was at the church, and Luke mentioned that he wanted to go to his dad's place. And he asked me if I wanted to go, and we went.
Here's Stephanie and I speaking about the testimony thus far.
It's pretty powerful to be there. I also didn't realize that Donald Stone was not alone when he discovered Kenneth's body. I didn't realize Kenneth's son, Luke, was also present.
I didn't know that either.
I didn't know that either until today.
How painful that must have been.
Next, Angie Canepa begins the difficult process of walking the cousins through the discovery of Kenneth Roden's body. Here again, Donald Stone.
We got there, we got out of the car. We walked up to the door, me and Luke. And once we got to the door, I told him, I said, this is your dad's place, you need to go in first. We walked into the, supposedly the living room. And I noticed to the right, I didn't see him in there nowhere. So I seen a stairway to the right. And I walked up the stairway. And that's where I found him up there in his bed.
And when you say you found him,
I found Kenny.
Can you tell us what condition you found him in?
He had blood all over his eyes.
And where was he located?
In his bed.
Okay.
He was dead.
Was it just you that walked up those stairs and saw Kenneth?
Yes.
Okay. It was significant just being in the courtroom and being close to family members. Kenneth Roden is one of the victims that we really have known the least about. We know that he's a father. We know that he lived by himself and that he was extremely close with Chris Sr. Seeing these crime scene photos, it was pretty excruciating.
I believe what struck me so much in the courtroom is, it's cliche, but how very different it is seeing these actual photos versus anything you see when you watch TV or a movie. Just the stark lack of life in these photos was so impactful and felt so permanent. We were sitting just feet away from Kenneth's family members, and for them, I cannot imagine how excruciating it was for them to have to see that.
And imagine being Luke. This is his father. He had to see his father's body. And this was a violent crime. So the trauma that they've been through, just seeing a dead body, let alone of somebody you love so deeply, and for them to have to get up there and relive it step by step by step, the bravery it took, I don't know that I would be able to find that level of courage.
Because Donald Stone identified the body, Canepa had no choice but to have him relive the traumatic events through crime scene photos.
Showing you what's been marked as D180-2052. Do you recognize that photo?
Yes.
And can you tell us what you recognize that as?
It's for Kaylee Schwab.
He breaks down here and grabs more tissues. Canepa, knowing this is horrible, prefaces each question with an apology.
Sorry. And is that how you saw Kenneth lying in his bed when you entered that residence?
Yes.
D187, which is 205. Mr. Stone, can you look at that? I'm sorry. What do you recognize that as?
Excuse me.
And is that how you saw him on that day?
Yes.
And you indicated that he had, does that match your recollection of the blood that you saw him?
Yes.
Okay.
Here's James Pilcher, longtime investigative reporter in Cincinnati, now with Local 12.
Everybody knows in Pike County how these people died. I would say they are trying to shock the jury at this point with the violence of it, for sure, because they show the pictures of people dead in their beds or on the floor time and time and time again.
The trial is reopening wounds that may have only just begun to heal. Traveling with us is investigative journalist Jeff Winkler, who you'll remember from previous seasons. It was his article about the Roden family that first piqued our interest in the case. He's joined us for several trips to Pike County over the years.
I think that's the weirdest thing, is going into the courthouse as the trial's going, starting for George, and the family's still there, still grieving, still having the same kind of grief and trauma. Then seeing the family having to just basically stuck in time of pain.
Can you imagine, though, the level of grief and despair? Even just to have to sit there and look at these photos, which I might add were pretty graphic, and we've never actually seen those before.
I think that's what struck me walking in there today, was just the, it's been 6 years, you know?
Yeah.
And so you've got the core mourners and the core folks in the middle of the trauma, mm-hmm. and everyone else is gone.
I thought it was also interesting to finally see the matriarch of the Roden family. She's Chris Sr.'s mother and the grandmother, therefore, of Hannah Mae Roden, Chris Jr. Roden, Frankie Roden. And I believe then her grandson would also be Luke.
Chris and Kenneth were her sons, which, yes, would make Luke her grandson.
Was so sad for Geneva Roden, because I looked over at one point and there were just some horrific crime scene photos being shown.
Here's reporter Anjanette Levy, who was also present in the courtroom.
And Geneva Roden was consoling her daughters, who were sobbing. She was sobbing. They were kind of consoling one another and just understandably falling apart, having to see photos of their loved ones murdered. And what is just an unbelievable amount of blood in some instances.
Meanwhile, Kenneth Roden's son Luke had also caught wind of the murders on the morning of April 22nd, 2016. Here he is testifying.
My mom came into my bedroom and said that I needed to get up, and Chris and everybody out there shot up on the hill.
Luke Roden is an imposing man with a beard and short brown hair. He wears a blue shirt. Luke is poised and speaks in a very matter-of-fact manner. As news spread around town of the murders, Luke tried to make his way to his uncle Chris Sr.'s house, but police had already cordoned off the road.
And then do you know how you knew to go to the church?
Somebody came out and let us know that they were all meeting over at the church.
While you were trying to get through there?
Right.
They informed you to go to the church?
Right.
People were gathering at the church?
Okay. Yeah.
Luke found Donald Stone, his father's cousin and best friend, at the church.
During this time, do you make any attempts to contact your father?
Yes, I tried contacting him about a dozen times. Never received anything back from him.
Okay. Is that normal?
No.
At that point, do you get concerned?
Yes, I do.
Here again, James Pilcher.
Both of them talked about the chaos and all of the things that were happening when they didn't know where Ken was. They couldn't get in touch with him. The prosecution even showed a picture of the cell phone that Ken would put in his window to try to get reception.
And you went down to your dad's. What did you do when you got there?
I seen his truck still in the driveway, so I got out.
Special Prosecutor Angie Canepa shows Luke and the jury various exterior photos of Kenneth's property. There is an abandoned boat on one side of the driveway entrance. Nestled back in the woods are two trailers and an outbuilding. It's April, so there are no leaves on the trees, but you can imagine it's pretty secluded once things are in bloom. Canepa spends nearly 30 minutes dissecting each photo for the jury. Reporter James Pilcher noted the level of detail on the part of the prosecution.
I don't mean this as a criticism towards the prosecution because they got to do what they got to do. But this is going extremely, extremely slowly. It feels like they're trying to kill a gnat with a 10-pound sledgehammer. They're pulling out every single piece of evidence they have for every single possible question that could come up. This trial has slowed to a snail's pace.
On cross-examination, the defense questions Luke Roden about a local whose name we have heard come up in our investigation. Big Money Mike.
Can you tell us who Big Money Mike is?
Couldn't tell you. I've heard his name, but couldn't tell you who he is.
Okay. You've heard his name from who?
Yeah.
Who from who?
I didn't hear about it until everything happened.
Okay.
So I couldn't.
Okay.
Stephanie and Jeff.
In Luke Roden's testimony, he made it clear that he hadn't heard the name Big Money Mike until after the murders and didn't know how it related to his family members being murdered.
I'm curious where the prosecution is leading to because it's come up now twice. We started doing our own digging about Big Money Mike, and we have to assume that that stands for Michael Moran. He is the attorney that has since died that we covered pretty extensively in season two, and he had a very checkered past. Maybe that's him, but again, we don't know for sure.
This is just another example of the prosecution building a narrative that we're not totally sure where it will lead until they rest.
Angie Canepa asked Luke about what happened after he and Donald Stone entered his father's home.
Donald, he stepped up in there and looked, and he ran past me and told me to get out, like he'd been shot.
He told you he had been shot?
He said blood all over his face.
Okay. When you were inside of your dad's home, did you step up at all into his bedroom?
I don't believe I stepped up in his bedroom. I may have stepped on the step right there, maybe.
Okay.
But I don't believe I stepped into his bedroom.
Okay. Were you able to see any part of him from where you were?
I was able to see his leg and the top of his head and the blanket. It was actually placed, like it's been placed on him.
Okay. So there was a blanket on him?
Right.
Okay. Were you able to see his face at that time at all?
No, I just see his forehead and his hair.
At this point, Canepa asked Luke about the money that was found on Kenneth's body.
I seen probably, I don't know how much, but like a few ones and fives and stuff like that, some money, paper money. And his pants was laying there beside it.
Here's Stephanie and Jeff Winkler.
We always sort of had heard that he had, almost like there was money thrown all over his body.
Yeah. It was a rolled up dollar bill and some change. That's all it was. There wasn't money lying everywhere.
We always maybe thought that was such an interesting crime scene and very different than the others. And maybe that was a way of making it look like a hit or make it look like the cartel had done it.
It was a good reminder that in those first 48 hours or whatever of just pure speculation, that's hard enough to beat. But then the little bits of fantasy, hitch on for a ride and don't let go.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian Cocktail Maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
For most of the morning, George Wagner IV sits motionless, looking down. This is true especially during Donald Stone's emotional testimony. George Wagner finally makes eye contact when questions turn to his family. Luke only had brief interactions with the Wagners over the years, but one with Billy stuck out in his memory.
I was out at his property one time. It was the one that's pretty far off the grid. And my dad and Chris loaning the backhoe for him to do something. And backhoe wouldn't start. So he got a hold of my dad and Chris. They brought out some tarps and space heater and all that to get the backhoe warmed up in order to get it started. I was standing there on the trailer, and he was standing beside me, looked at me and said, "You see those two people?" He said, "They're some really good people." He said, "But if I ever had to fuck with them, that they had to shoot them."
If they ever had to what?
Mess with them. If he had to tussle with them, whatever, that he'd have to shoot them.
Did he explain why that was, or did he say anything more?
No, that was it.
But he was telling you that they were really great people.
Yeah.
First.
Right.
At the end of his testimony, Luke was asked to point out George by both the prosecution and the defense.
Mr. Roden, is George Wagner present in the courtroom today?
Yes.
If so, can you point to where he is sitting and describe for us what he's wearing?
Right there. The vest one.
Okay, he hasn't changed appearance-wise at all?
Yes, he has.
How is that?
Weight-wise.
He was much larger when you last saw him, right?
Yes.
Here again, Stephanie.
I was struck just by seeing George Wagner in person. Having never seen him before in person, he was slighter than I imagined him being.
He's got a little bald going on, you know. Boots are shined. Just kind of looks regular, which is not what you know, they're supposed to have some sort of, like, dark glow around them, right?
Media covering the trial immediately latched on to the story Luke had told about his interaction with Billy Wagner.
The son of one of the Pike County massacre victims testified Billy Wagner threatened the Roden family 4 or 5 years before the actual shootings.
Luke said that while his dad and uncle were doing a good deed for Billy Wagner, Billy told Luke that a dust-up between the three of them would not end well.
After Canepa's well-planned line of questioning of Luke Roden, George's defense attorney has very little to add. He rests within minutes. Here again, James Pilcher.
Clearly, they're cutting off
any opportunity for the defense to ask, well, why didn't you ask this? Why didn't you do that? Why didn't you do this? Now, the defense is still trying to find its way to do that.
The final witness of the day illustrates the prosecution's strategy perfectly. Brett Hatfield was a friend and co-worker of Kenneth Roden's. He opts out of media coverage, but we were there to follow his testimony.
Brett Hatfield worked in Columbus at the same company as Kenneth, so the pair very often carpooled together. However, on the morning of April 22nd, 2016, they didn't. And when Hatfield arrived at Kenneth's home, probably around 4 a.m. the morning of April 22nd, he said there were no lights on and that Kenneth didn't come to the door as he normally did.
It turns out that the day before, Hatfield said that Kenneth had been complaining of high blood pressure, a condition that Luke explained sometimes made him sick and could cause him to miss work.
So despite Kenneth's car being in the lot, Hatfield assumed that maybe somebody picked him up and took him to the hospital, so he just left.
James Pilcher.
He came and saw Kenneth all the time, so you put him up on the stand. They're going incrementally, chronologically, and I think they're feeling their way as they go through this trial, to let the jury know we took every step to interview everybody we could.
Legal analyst Mike Allen, who's speaking with Jeff, agrees.
It just tells the story. Here, this poor guy, you know, he wants to pick up his buddy to drive to Columbus to go to work. Buddy's not there. That's something that's pretty strong. And I know the prosecution wanted the jury to hear that.
Yeah, it definitely paints a picture.
And that's what they need to do. That's what they're doing.
Hours after Hatfield left Kenneth Roden's trailer that morning, a member of the Roden family called to tell him about the murders. Hatfield immediately left work in Columbus and returned to Piketon. Here's Luke Roden.
Did he arrive at some point?
Yes, he did. Whenever we were sitting there waiting on the cops to come and all that, he showed up on his four-wheeler and just did like a scam over my dad's property behind his trailer and stuff like that.
Okay. And do you know what he was looking for at the time?
Cameras, seeing if the cameras were still around to see if there was any footage, more or less.
Okay.
Many of the cameras were missing. The prosecution asked him about Kenneth's dog, Brownie. Earlier in the day, both Luke Roden and Donald Stone testified the dog was inside the trailer when they arrived. But Hatfield adds a very telling detail about the dog. Here again, Stephanie and Jeff.
Interesting about Brownie is that Hatfield says the dog would bite anybody. Didn't matter who you were, unless you called the dog by name. And that's interesting because it was reported that the Wagners didn't have any dog bites on them whatsoever. So why didn't Brownie attack?
So, Steph, that says to me that it seems pretty likely that whoever was there that night must have known the dog by name. And keep in mind that we have heard from numerous people that many of the Roden properties had dogs like this on them. So that would be indicative that whoever was at all of these crime scenes knew all of the dogs, in theory. Hatfield added yet another chilling detail to the timeline of April 22nd, 2016. He said that when he found out about the murders, he tried calling everyone in the Roden family. He even sent a DM to Hannah May on social media, who, as we know, was tragically already dead. Hatfield said that he never got a response, but he did get a notification that the message was read.
So what does that mean?
I would imagine after the murder, the killers were probably cleaning up or figuring out what to do, and her phone was pinging, and to silence it, maybe they looked at it or opened the text message and shut it down. All we know is that Hatfield sent a message after she was already murdered and somebody read that message, and it could not have been Hannah Mae Roden.
We know that it's come up that Jake Wagner took several phones from the crime scenes and allegedly destroyed them the next day. Is this one of those phones? And think about this. Can you imagine being Jake Wagner and you're literally reading a text on the phone of the mother of your baby, who you just murdered, and you have enough wherewithal to potentially check her phone and read her texts?
With the trial underway, the Roden family is inching towards closure, but not before some wounds are reopened for all the world to see. Let's stop here for another break.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
After court adjourned for the day, Luke was interviewed on the courthouse steps.
Luke, what was it like to be on the witness stand today?
Nerve-wracking. Seeing the photos and stuff, bringing the past up and everything is really hard on my mental state.
And Geneva's your grandmother, right?
Correct.
Talk about how this has affected her. We've seen her crying for it. Just talk about her and the whole family, how this has affected her.
She went through a lot, and I wish she had never had to go through any of this. She's lost one of her children at a young age, and now she's dealing with all her other children and her grandchildren murdered. And I think everything's getting closer to the end. Can't wait till it's over, really, so the rest of our family can go on with our lives. And
I can't imagine. Can you even put it into words what it's like?
Worst nightmare, living in hell, really.
What are your thoughts about the Wagners?
My thoughts about the Wagners, I just hope they get everything comes to them.
When you examined that hat, did you find what you believe to be a bullet hole in the back of it?
Yes.
Both sides agreed that traces of Gary Roden's blood were found on the doorknob, but not of the Wagners. That seemed to make the case for the defense.
None of the evidence collected or examined with respect to that scene contained any DNA that was linked to George Wagner, this defendant, Jake Wagner, Angela Wagner, or Billy Wagner.
When are they all going to tie this together? When are they going to point to George being part of this conspiracy? Because none of the physical evidence presented so far had any of the Wagners to any of these crime scenes. I can tell you the prosecutors are telling us behind the scenes, it's coming, that we're all going to tie it together. We're starting to see threads of it, but...
More on that next time. For more information on the case and relevant photos, follow us on Instagram at KT_studios. The Piketon Massacre is produced by Stephanie Lidecker, Jeff Shane, Scott DeGraw, Andrew Arnau, and me, Courtney Armstrong. Editing and sound design by Jeff Twa. Music by Jared Astin. The Piketon Massacre is a production of iHeartRadio and KT Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Please welcome our Pike County Dogwood Festival Queen.
Lord, I just thank you for bringing us all together as a community.
911. I think my brother-in-law's dead. There's blood all over the house.
Who could have killed 8 family members in one night?
I lost my best friend, and I'll never be the same because of that day.
4 crime scenes, no DNA, no witnesses.
The killer left those children laying in their mother's blood.
The word that comes to mind is overkill.
Who was the mastermind?
I'm telling you, if they frame us, I'm not sitting in prison.
One thing I learned, the smaller the town, the bigger the secrets.
Be sure to watch our upcoming documentary, The Pike County Murders, A Family Massacre, premiering on NBC Universal's Oxygen Network and also streaming on Peacock this Thanksgiving Day weekend, November 24th and November 25th. Please check your local listings, and our hearts are with the Rodins and the Gilley families.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are coming back to Atlanta right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.